I am Brian.
And this is R&B Talks. Sorry for our absence. It was his fault.
Yeah, it's my fault. It is my fault. I take full and total responsibility. I would like to apologize for all of the heartache that I have caused. And I will promise that my behaviors will be controlled. Thank you very much.
No one believes you.
I don't think they do either. That's okay. I'm probably not going to change. You and I are kind of, we're kind of dyed in the wool, right? We're not really.
But Brian, I am in my whole existence is about judging people.
Dude, I read the text you sent me. If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, Reggie got in a little spat with some folks on the Book of Face, which I seem to feel like that's all that ever happens on Facebook anymore is a bunch of keyboard warriors arguing. But
it's not worth it. But what I'm saying is these are two spinsters who are single for a reason at their age.
Yeah.
Clearly they both have some problems with submission in the biblical sense.
Yeah.
They both have a family that has been motherly driven for years, decades even. So their kids have been over-mothered, and you can tell that, by the way. That they are no, and I've never liked them anyway. Like it's not. It was just so. I mean, it really didn't. It didn't bother me. It was just like, I just you know.
Well, what I mean, honestly, it was just funny. The only thing that that's absent to me is what the whole discussion started over. Like,
okay, let me say this: if you're a dude and you walk around with your pants around your thighs or your knees and you got your underwear hanging out, you are a schmuck.
You lack discipline on every
You're
level.
A boy. You're not a man. You are a thug or a criminal, whatever. None of these things.
That's not even it. Here's the problem.
That's what it is.
And take my boys as an example. Have you ever seen my boys dressed that way?
No.
Okay. Because the thing that I teach my sons is to respect themselves. Because if you don't respect yourself, you can't respect anybody else. And when you see someone running around talking slang constantly, wearing their pants, sagging off their butt, and the weakest argument on the planet is, well, it's the generation. No, it's not. Ignorant behavior is ignorant behavior. It just is. I mean, I'm not judging anybody personally. I don't know you personally. But if you dress like a wannabe gangster clown, then I'm going to assume that's what you want to be judged as. And if you dress respectfully and you wear, you know, your pants where they're supposed to be and you're not, oh, dog this and play of that. And yeah, dude, you know,
there's a problem, dude, here's
the direct. Here's your problem, Reggie, and I'm going to lay it out there, and this is probably going to get me a lot of hate, but I'm going to say it anyway. The problem is we have a very large generation of weak men. And there are a very large generation of weak men because women who think that they are strong women, who are actually not strong women, they're just strong-willed women. Well, there's a difference. A strong woman understands and knows that there needs to be a positive male influence. And if there isn't a positive male influence, your need to defend your position as a woman is not going to attract one. My wife would never tolerate my children behaving that way.
But it really wasn't about that. It was,
but that's the core of it though, right? That's why there's the reaction.
It was because it was one of their children.
Yeah.
A picture of them in the driveway helping her out, which I don't care. I mean, that's not really.
Good
but
for him.
Her message was, look at those young kids who, like, just because they wear their pants like that and stuff doesn't mean they don't have a heart and all this other nonsense. And it's that's fine,
yeah.
But that's still not how you teach a man or a boy to become a man. You teach him to be a decent person
don't and be a dress nice guy, appropriately. Be a good man. right?
It's really not. That's what it was all about.
But there's the epitome of the bullseye, right? If you want to teach your kids to be nice kids, nice boy, if you want to teach your sons to be nice kids, they're going to come in last. They're never going to be at a head. They're always going to get railed and run over. And you're always going to be defending the fact that they get railed and run over. But if you teach your children to be, you teach your sons to be good men, which is to say capable, independent, not needing to feel, what's the word I'm looking for? Not needing to feel loved or included in groups that
are validated
or validated by other people's things or by culture, then guess what? You're going to have a successful young man, right? And I get it. We're in a culture of, well, Instagram and Twitter.
Here's the thing. Decency still exists. There's still a thing about being a decent. Who wants to see? And I'm telling you this. I don't care how fashionable it is. No one wants to see your underwear.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
No, nobody wants to. I mean, it just looks, it's disrespectful and it's stupid. It's not a decent thing.
Yeah.
I'm not out here saying vilifying anybody for wearing whatever they got on.
Yeah.
Because there's people that I would never go up to somebody and go, hey, this is, and now I shouldn't say never, because there's probably an instance where I would say this is a little inappropriate, man. You might want to check this out. If it was some dude with his pants down in public, yeah, I probably would. But
I've walked up to women in the gym and been like, you should cover that up, dude. Like, that's like, you're complaining about all these dudes staring at you. Well, you got all your goodies out for them to look at. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to hang all your stuff out there, you can't be surprised when, you know, passersby want to peek in the shop window, right? Like,
but here's the thing, though. These were two supposedly Christian women, too. And so what happens is what immediately when you get into this discussion, now that they start throwing out how I'm so detracting from the body of Christ and how I'm leading people away. And all, I mean, that's what they were started going down, right? Because of all that. And then I'll quote, my whole existence is based on judging others, right? So not only are you making a judgment by saying something like that, by the way, but you're actually saying you don't, which is even worse. That's terrible. We all should judge everything. I'll be honest with you.
This is kind of a thing I've been seeing going on amongst Christians, men and women lately, is I think they're as infected by the woke mind virus as everyone else. Look, your Bible says exactly what you're supposed to do. If you're claiming to be a Christian and you're not biblically sound and walking in that biblical thing, Jesus didn't walk around with his pants buckled around his kneecaps, and neither did Paul, and neither did, you know, Abraham. You know, people were, you know, decently clothed, and, you know, and this is that whole thing of I want to be a Christian, but I want to be comfortable. Well, sorry, it doesn't work that way. God never promised us it would be easy. God never promised us it would be painless. God just promised us eternal life. Everything else is up to us, right? Like, it's not this, it's this thing where, you know, I get so worn out with these people that want to rail, you know, the very response that they gave you wasn't a Christian response. That was an attack response.
I mean, see throughout verses and stuff. Here's the thing.
What verses did they throw out?
Man, give me a break. Like I said, let me think about it. Something. Let me guess.
Judge not, lest you be judged.
Oh, probably, but I don't remember, because I mean, I looked at it brief, like I saw the verses, I knew what it was, and I'm like, oh my God, because contextually is everything, and then you get these idiots throwing that out of proportion. But it all comes from, because I'm just taking a good guess here. I'm a man. They have had horrible experience with men and have thus are horrible women themselves to be a wife, because they're both not married. They've both been divorced and all this crap. And I don't even know the circumstances behind all that stuff. I don't care. And here's the biggest thing about I can say to all this. I don't care about these two women. Like, I have no, like, they're not close to me at all. They have thousands of freaking Facebook friends, which I don't see what the hell the point of that is. But the whole thing is, you got two. What this sparked in me though was like this idea that we have a lot of boys being overly mothered.
No, absolutely.
That they're not getting the right counsel to become men. And this is relatively like.
This is everywhere.
Well, yeah, but this whole thing about what you wear, I mean, that's not like the most important thing on earth, but it does go back to how you respect yourself and show others who you are.
How you present yourself.
Yeah, I mean.
Whether you like it or not, how you present yourself is how you will be taken.
Yeah, I walk around and I know this. I put on my overalls and a t-shirt and my John Deere cap that's ate up, and I walk around all day, every day with that everywhere. That's my default attire. I absolutely know what's that taken into account. But I'm also in my 40s and I'm not a young kid and I'm not,
I also look at a young generation of men that like to make the claim, well, nobody listens to us and nobody takes us seriously. Then pull your pants up, go buy a shirt that doesn't have a gun or a wrapper on it. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't wear a shirt with your favorite rapper on it. My youngest boy likes rap music, but he doesn't walk around with his pants hanging around his ankles, and he's not disrespectful, and he doesn't have – he's very well-spoken. Both of my children are. But there's this thing where there's this defense, right? I'll be honest with you. There have been many a times as an employer where somebody has walked into me and said, I want a job. And their appearance alone didn't get them hired because if I'm going to ask somebody to give me an opportunity to feed myself, I'm not going to go looking like I just walked out of, fifth period history at high school. I'm going to put on a nice shirt and a nice pair of pants and some nice shoes, and I'm going to present myself in a way that's going to give me my best shot. And one of the reasons, and here's something that's very critical that I think is going on here, is we have become too open a society. And what I mean by that is everything gets posted on Facebook.
Or the fake things get
posted. Well, not even that. Like, I don't post, I very rarely post pictures of my kids on Facebook.
Me neither.
I do from time to time, occasionally. But I don't want the world in my kids' business. My kids need to know that they have a modicum of privacy and that they have a right to that. This thing of living publicly in the way that people live publicly now is scary. When you're putting out stuff that don't need to be put out there, you got some issues, man. You need to work on that. You need to be, if we took as much time and energy into fixing ourselves and preparing ourselves as we did in trying to convince everyone that we're Facebook worthy or Instagram worthy or Twitter worthy, we'd be a much better society in general.
Sure.
But here's the thing. We've become so addicted to the quick fix of, oh, I'll post this on Facebook. I can honestly tell you that I've posted tons of stuff on Facebook. I have rarely, if ever, and maybe never, maybe, unless it was responding to a comment that somebody made that I know personally, I don't care who likes it or doesn't like it. Nobody can like it. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't care. Like I lose no sleep over it. I could care less who likes me or dislikes me. And I'm going to be honest with you. That's something else, Reggie. We need to get out of this toxic, heady place where everyone has to like us. This existence that people live where I have to be liked. No, I don't care if you like me or not. I care if you respect my boundaries. And if you're in my circle, I will certainly pour into you. But if you don't like me, save your oxygen, man. I don't care. Save the energy in your fingers from typing something on Facebook or Twitter or Insta, whatever. I don't care. None of it matters because I don't care. Like, and I got told one day, you're very callous for saying that. No, but I know who's pouring into me and who's not. And if you think by sliding into the comment section of something I put on Facebook and challenging me that I'm somehow going to look at you as some kind of precious martyr of information, you are 1,000% wrong. And that's the way I look at anyone who gets on there and starts taking shots at me for whatever reason. I don't care. Like, do me a favor. Do something better with your time, because I'm not going to waste mine dealing with you.
But okay, and here's the other point to this. And let me add something to that, because I think it's also equally irrelevant. When you say you just don't know what that person's been in, been through or something. Okay, let's lay a big fact down. Let's lay this down. Everyone's been through something.
And just like this, Joe Rogan says, I'm not a huge proponent of everything Joe Rogan says, but what Joe Rogan says is true. Whatever the worst thing is that's happened to you is the worst thing that's happened to you. But everybody's had that worst thing that's happened to them. That doesn't give you a right or a free pass to behave any certain way.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, it doesn't, it's just so silly to me, man, that people just get this. And you know what this is? Let me tell you what this is. This is a purely, I wouldn't say purely, but this is very much a first world hoity-toity type of scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. This is an entitled, overprivileged, spoiled, whatever you want to say kind of scenario. Yeah. This is what this is.
No one cares that you're upset. No one cares.
And I mean, go
work on yourself. Stop trying to make everybody else care that you're upset. No one cares.
But it's just, you know, but all I really didn't even, you know, most of the time I don't really comment on anything. I just saw this one. I'm like, why would you teach your boy that this is okay and he should just express himself?
Here's my question. Here, I'll ask you a better question. You ready, Reggie? Can you give me one scenario that would enact the betterment of your existence where you're ass is hanging out of your pants and your underwear is showing and you're basically saying, I don't really care how I present myself. What can you name one scenario where that's going to better you in some way? Or here's a big problem. Here's another big problem too. And this, you know,
Let me say that here. Let's go here for a second. On that same token.
Yeah.
Do you see anybody in the NBA draft wearing that to go up and accept their?
No, they're wearing a suit.
They're wearing a suit, right? NFL, wearing a suit.
Wearing a suit, right? Yeah.
You go to the Oscars or the Academy Awards or whatever.
They're wearing a suit.
Wearing a suit, right? You go into politicians and stuff.
What are they wearing?
You go to a nice dinner, just going out to a nice dinner.
Very nice restaurant. A very nice suit.
You're wearing, or at least a
sport coat.
But you're what all those things like anything of those things. You don't see any known, famous, respected people wearing their pants where their boxers are hanging out.
No,
you don't.
You don't.
Because it's just not the way a man is going, it should be doing things.
Well, and this is another thing. And this goes back to the weakening of masculinity. Men used to take pride in the fact that they led. Men used to take pride in the fact that they were strong and they provided and that they set the mark and the example by being the consistent and being the best representation that they could be. And that is literally going away in spades. Like it's so sad because I look there and here's the thing too. And I'll say this too, Reggie, I know many people of the younger generation that I've gotten to know that dress like, you know, straight out of Dum Dum, and they get zero opportunities because even though they might be hardworking and might be loving and good people, what you present to the world will reflect back on you. And what they're presenting to the world is an, I don't care.
Like I've never gone to a job interview.
No.
With anything, but at least a button up shirt, it depended on what I was doing, but like nowadays, if I were to have any kind of interview, it's a full on complete suit.
Yeah.
Probably a three piece, something like that. It's very, you know, but anyway,
or,
I guess
or at least a nice dress shirt and a blazer and some slacks.
Yeah.
And a
pair of dress shoes, right? when I was spoken at a convention or something like that, or some kind of technology thing, I'm always wearing something like that. It's not, I'm not, you know, so I mean, I'm just, yes, it's not about, not about what you wear in your driveway or like whatever, but you need to encourage the boys to dress and present themselves in a manner that's befitting
and
of
that
the man they want to be.
And also not be something male or female. It doesn't have anything to do with whether you're a mother or a father. That is not something that you should ever publicly display and glorify. Because that shows an epic lack of sensibility and responsibility in a parent.
It does.
To and say, so
this,
here's my son. Look at his brand new Fruit of the Loom boxers that are two sizes too big because apparently everything's got it. Now, don't get me wrong. I wear bigger shirts, but I'm a bigger guy, right? I remember when and I'll give you an example. My grandmother was the biggest cheerleader for me to be masculine. My wife is one of the biggest cheerleaders for me to be masculine, right? She doesn't want a soft man. She wants a masculine, strong, not aggressive. Have I been aggressive before? Sure. Am I aggressive now? Not unless I have to be, you know, and that would be a pretty... You and I talked on the porch the other day. I'm no longer that guy, right? Like, that's not my thing. I don't feel like that needs to be who I am. So, but I mean, my wife doesn't want a soft man. My wife, you know, and the thing is, you know, we want a man whose emotion has emotion, but when he shows emotion, we emasculate him and call him weak, and he's too. There's this toxic, heady brew. And I guarantee you that if you went head first into some of these people's lives and looked at their relationships and how they worked, you're going to find a lot of that toxic back and forth rebound behavior that goes on, right? So what I would say is the same thing I said when you and the dude were going back and forth and I jumped in. Dude, get off... Unfriend them, get off Facebook with them, ignore the fact that they exist. They contribute nothing to your life. Nothing. Like nothing. They pour nothing into your existence.
Nothing.
They don't care, because if you care, you don't approach somebody that way. If you're a biblically based person, you're not going to jump on Facebook and harangue somebody. That's a weak, that's playing from a position of weakness instantly, right? I don't play from a position of weakness. If I got a problem with you, Reggie, I will sit down and be like, Reggie, we got an issue, man. We need to talk about it. You're my friend and I want to make sure that we're okay. I don't go on to Facebook and be like, my friend Reggie, the bigger, 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 bigger. Nobody cares, right? If that's all you can do, again, save your energy and work on yourself.
This is all my fault. I mean, like, in other words, I started all that because I stepped in and just said, man, you know, no, you should never.
I told you, man.
It's my fault.
It's a toxic place to hang out.
It's my fault because I just saw that. I'm like, you should not encourage this kind of behavior because it looks bad on the person.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then it gets twisted around that because I was attacking directly this child or whatever. And it's like, no, I never said anything directly about that. I was commenting about what you should promote and what you should praise or not. Not that your kid is doing this or that. Don't know your kid, don't care.
Yeah, your kid has no relevance.
It's
in
again,
my life,
when right? you feel like, that attacked by something like that, then you're already feeling self-conscious about what you're doing.
Yeah, if you feel, like, you know, and okay, so I'm going to say something. I don't want my friend Reggie to take this the wrong way, but somebody asked me the other day. I was having a conversation with somebody about apologetics.
Okay.
And defending my faith. And the guy goes, well, why don't all Christians have a degree in apologetics? And I was like, because all Christians don't feel the need to defend their faith. Right. Different people have different That's reasons true. For doing certain things. Right. Like, I've never been that person. I don't ever really feel like I need to defend what I believe. If you ask me about it, I'll tell you. if you get rowdy, I'll leave you standing there talking to yourself. I don't have time for that. Like, yeah, I don't have, like, I don't have. So, but I think that's a perfect example of this is you obviously feel that there's something that you need to protect. More than likely, it's not your kid. More than likely, it's yourself. Because if it was your kid and you were trying to protect your kid, you'd be the one telling him, pull your damn pants up.
Yeah, but the whole point is, I didn't bring this up because I really don't care about these two women. Because I think, I do think they're two, as my grandma used to say, spinsters who just have completely missed the boat on a lot of things. Yeah. And I never really liked them anyway. So it's not like it's a, but I hope this is still not going on. I posted this before years ago that like, I thought this had gone away, this whole pant thing. Because, I mean, really,
I see it all the time, dude.
I mean, well, it depends on where you are.
Yeah, I see it all the time, man.
But typically, it's hood rats and, like, freaking thug life people and stuff like that, right? It really does carry that stereotype for a reason. And it's like, I wouldn't want anybody's kid to be associated in any manner with that kind of stereotypical behavior.
I'll give you an even better example.
Oh, boy.
All right, some of the big rappers in the 90s, 50 Cent, Eminem, Nelly. If you see them now, what are they wearing as adult men?
Not that.
They're wearing suits because even they eventually realized this is just stupid. And they're all entrepreneurs and wealthy men who have made great lives for themselves. And I don't necessarily agree with everything they say, but hey, man, you figured something out, right? And got yourself together. Like again, I don't think this has anything to do with the kid. I think this has to do with
the parent. They're
feeling the parent having a spotlight put on them for allowing a behavior to go on that is just not
just okay. Promoting
it. It's just promoting a ridiculous lifestyle, right?
Look like, at the it came from such a stereotypical over motherly thing. Like it was just like this is coming from someone who has absolutely not had this nuclear family type of thing. Anyway, we spent way too much time.
That's okay.
But the point being is like, look, hey,
sometimes we just gotta get it out there.
But If you call someone judgy, you're actually making a judgment.
Yeah.
Think about that. So therefore, why even go there? Two, you should be judging everyone and everything.
How about you start a dialogue?
But I'm just saying.
How about you say, hey, Reggie, I understand that's how you feel. Could you tell me why you feel that way? You know, you might learn something if you actually try to start a conversation instead of going into attack mode.
It was Facebook, which attack mode is like the default.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, which is not, I mean, you know, I get it. And it's hard to not get wrapped up to these things, whatever. But anyway,
it is what it is.
All right. So anyway, going on
today, our topic
Hold on. We're not ready.
Pickles and sausage.
We're not ready. I just want to say I've seen recently, I don't know if you saw the Tucker Carlson, Ted Cruz thing.
No, I've literally unplugged.
Well, I have to an extent politics stuff. This conversation, I saw a clip of it and I had to watch it a little bit more because I found it interesting. Was it got into the Tucker and Ted Cruz had this like debate between what Israel is and why Christians should support or not support or whatever.
Okay.
And there was it really highlighted that there's still a real misunderstanding with the biblical text in Genesis 12 and Rome and now all and going all the way to Romans 8, 9 or 11. I can't remember.
I want to say Romans 11,
but somewhere in there, because the nation of Israel, yes, is a nation, but it doesn't mean like you as a Christian, you should be like full support of everything the government does.
Yeah.
I'll echo like Todd Frio where he said there's really like he's his chosen people, the Jewish people that make up Israel are what we're supposed to protect. And cause you bless them, he blesses you.
Yeah.
Right. The nation of Israel is something that the zip code is what is a good example of what he said is what we should uphold because it is a chosen nation. But That does not mean that everything that Benjamin Netanyahu does is should be completely and totally approved of and promoted and protected.
No, he's in the government.
There's a really easy way to separate that. There is a political boundary and a theological boundary here, right? There's a people. There's a seed that is talked about, the Abrahamic covenant, that is important to understand. I'm just putting this out there for people so they can understand this. But like, it's not just because it's not a geographically boundary net per se. That's part of it, but it's also more like the people, the Jewish people, and also the nation of Israel, but not the necessarily agreeing and saying everything that the government of the current nation state of Israel does is should be upheld and protected. I just want to throw that out there because it seems to be a lot of conversation about Israel and what that means for a Christian.
Yeah.
That's it. Right. It's been a weird conversation with all the crap going on with the Middle East, which I'm not going to get into that.
I think my favorite thing I've heard so far is there was two guys arguing on a podcast. One was anti the bombing. One was pro the bombing. And the guy that was pro taking nuclear weapons from Iran stopped the guy and goes, "All right, let me ask you a question. If I told you to find the craziest, most ideologically damaged person in the room and gave you a detonatable weapon and asked you to hand it to him, would you hand it to him?" And the guy was like, "No." And he goes, "The Ayatollah Khomeini is the most ideologically deranged human being in Iran. And he cannot have a nuclear bomb because he is one of maybe three people on the planet Earth that if he had one, wouldn't be afraid to use it." I agree. Israel, look, we already know that those countries are doomed to war until he returns. It says it in the Bible.
That's it.
Right? So us going over there and trying to stop wars in between them, I mean, not going to happen. It's not ordained by God, therefore it's not going to happen. Right? So, but unfortunately, being an Israeli soldier and a member of the Israeli government shouldn't be mixed up with being a citizen of Israel who is being victimized. Because whether you like it or not, Hamas, Iran, and all of its proxies are evil. They are evil people that will enact evil things. And you cannot allow them to have enough power to enact that evil on a mass level. You just can't do it. And again, I'm not necessarily pro Trump, but I am pro what he did, because he took a situation where millions of people could have died. Nuclear war could have broke out. If that crazy fool would have got a bomb, he would have used it in any way he saw fit to get what he wanted. And Trump went, "No. No, we're not going to allow that to happen." And I backed that decision, right? It's one of the Trump decisions that I think was a smart and wise choice. So
I am so burnt out though on the politics stuff and of social media stuff too, or whatever. And this is part of, and to be honest, I've been here for a while with American Christianity as a whole, as a church thing. That is what is a problem, because I am. And I've been this way for a while. And it's like, and I get this question a lot about, especially when it comes to like churches and stuff. Well, if you don't like it, why don't you create your own? It's not that simple. Okay. Raising up a church
it's not a light undertaking.
It's not just that though, but that should be a calling that is illuminated for you that says you should, here's your path forward in some way. If you're a prayerful and devout Christian, I would totally expect some direction or door opening for that to happen, mm-hmm. to lead me to start doing that kind of stuff. Okay. But also too, that doesn't even matter.
To steel man it a little bit, and I'm not trying to argue with you because I agree with you for the most part. I do believe that we're all called to be a part of the body. And I believe when you're in a church and you disagree with what's going on in the church, you should speak.
You should.
I'm not saying that you should go in and try to take over the elders' meeting and like kick down doors. But if I don't like something that's going on in the church, I'm going to say it. I'm just going to say, hey, man, this is not good. This is not what we should be doing, you know? But I do agree with you that you know, starting your own churches, you know, I think
that's a pastoral calling.
Yeah, I think that's a pastoral calling. I think that's and it's a huge undertaking. I mean, think about what it takes to actually start a church. Like, it's not an easy thing to do. One of the things I always admired about, you know, a lot of people that you and I both know is that they had a lot of gumption and a lot of nerve and a lot of God-given bravery to go out and say, I'm going to start from scratch and I'm going to build a church. I think the problem is, and the reason why I got burnt out with denominationalism is it's the tribalism. It's the, well, my denomination is better. Well, I'm a Catholic and I'm a Baptist and I'm a Presbyterian and I don't care what you are. I really don't care. If you're living biblically, you can be a two-headed monkey named Bob. I don't care. If you're living a biblical life, if you're living biblical principles, if you're trying your heart, and that's not to say you're perfect. I fall every day. Reggie falls every day. We screw up. We make mistakes, and I will. But the difference being, I recognize that I am faulty and I know that I need to be working on that constantly. But, you know, that's a mass undertaking of, and then you're dealing with all the different personalities and people that want to come in and push on the church and that I want to lead this and I want to, and it breaks. Nope. Sorry. We're not going to be doing that. I wouldn't do that. I am very much detracted from that, right? Like, I'll help if you need me to help. If you want me to volunteer to do something, cool. But I ain't leading no church, dude. I don't have, that's not a calling for me, so I'm not even going to try. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, anyway, I'm just saying that's so with that, with there's a lot of things in my currently that have, I'm just sick of. And it is a burned out type of scenario for me.
Well, I'm suffering it right now.
There's a lot of things. But I think, you know, one thing I read in, is that, you know, burnout, and this is what we're talking about. Burnout is, a state of fatigue or frustration resulting from devotion to a way of life or a relationship that has failed to produce the expected reward. Sort of.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Considered to be a process rather than a state or a condition.
I would argue that there's another type of burnout.
I would too.
That it's a self-imposed burnout. It's the burnout that it's pouring out and pouring out and pouring out and pouring out and pouring out. And it doesn't matter how much you gain, you're pouring twice as much as you're gaining. And you burn yourself up because you pour into all these different things and you empty yourself out in that. It drains your passion and your concentration and your focus and your spirituality. And it turns it into this toxic mix of resentment. You have to be really careful because I get it. I want to pour into people and I want to do this and I do this and I want to do this and I want to do this. Well, eventually, man, you just can't do anymore.
Well, here's what I thought about this a little bit. I've seen this so many times. This is why I kind of do things the way I do, really, because I've learned this from men who have been here. But like, you know, how many families you know that are so tied up in like we got soccer practice, we got this, we got this going on, we got this going on, we got this going on, and there's no room in there for, let alone your own personal growth, but helping anybody else. You're just so wrapped up in everything with your kids and your job, there is nothing else. Like you hardly have, you probably already hardly ever have a date night kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen so many times that you at, you go, like, for instance, when I've done several different church, either projects or whatever, it's hard to get participation in it because all the dudes are running around thinking they got to do all these things and get all this stuff, and there's no room to do anything for service.
So we're trained
in the community,
but that part of that is how we're trained as young men.
Yeah,
the grind, dude. Well, but I've said this before, and I don't say this in a way where I resent it. I just have made peace with the reality of it. Men's value is transactional to the world and to in most relationships. We are what we can provide, right? That's the thing that's been beaten into us since we were. I remember my grandfather telling me when I was young, "You're gonna get a wife. You're gonna have to do this. You're gonna have to do that every day, all day." And you know, it's there's a reason why men in their 20s and 30s are not getting married and are not getting into relationships, because I think there's come a point in an overarching kind of biodome-ish sort of environment where our anxiety and stress as men has been cast onto these younger men, and they're like, "I don't want that. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to drag through the mud and feel like everything I have is taken from me." And, but part of that too is, you know, we mistake busy for productive.
Yeah, correct.
That is not always the case.
Right.
I have found that when I work in bursts, not at my job, I go to my job every day and I work every day and I like my job and I do my job and I enjoy the people I work with. But when I'm doing things at my house, when I have projects, I tend to work in bursts because it's the way that I can do it and not burn myself out. I'll go a hard 4 hours, 2 or 3 days a week. And I'm like, cool, everything's caught up. Because I don't want to be that guy that comes home, throws on his clothes, goes out in the yard, mows, blah, blah, comes in after dark, eats, passes out, gets back up. That will kill you eventually, right? Like, we're not built to be that way.
Well, I think that you should have probably days like that, right?
Yeah.
But that shouldn't be the regular occurrence.
Yeah.
Now, it can be a period, it can be a season, maybe, yeah. Right? Which is, I've experienced that many times with all kinds of things, but, you know, the thing is, I guess for Christian men, especially, like we're not being industrious, we're not being holy.
Yeah. Well, we think that transactional relationship works with God, and it doesn't.
No.
God has stated many times, your acts are like filthy rags. It's in the Bible, right? Like there's nothing you're going to do that's going to make God love you anymore. So you're right.
I mean, biblically, Ecclesiastes 2:22 and 23 are probably, that's a good verse for people to understand. I forgot what translation this is from. It's in the notes. What do people get for all their toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? Their minds do not rest even at night. I mean, the thing is too, is we as men got to understand it's not when we try to be God, which I know a lot of Christian men don't think they are, but when we're trying to tackle everything impossible that we can, and we're running ourselves ragged, we're not allowing God to take his place as the sovereign king of the universe. Well,
it's the holiness fallacy, right? Like God's holy, so I have to be as holy as God. Well, if God is, you know, forever eternal and the omnipresent and past, present, future, and I gotta be that way too. Well, for unfortunately, you're not capable of it. So it's, I call it, you know, it's the holiness lie. It's not that you're not a holy person and that you don't believe in a holy God, but you can't compete, man. It's like a 2-year-old running against Carl Lewis in the Olympics. It's
no, it cute ain't, it and all, work.
But it ain't gonna work.
But I mean, for me, like, this is one thing with this whole, like, I feel really bad the last week and a half. And it's worn me out. It's worn me down.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm much more agitable.
Agitable. You got agitabilations?
What word is that?
Irritable.
That's what irritable you're looking for. I know. Agitable.
I'm going to go home and be like, I'm agitable.
You know, but like, you know, it's just like, I'm just so done. That's what I feel like. I'm just so freaking done.
You're cooked.
It's not just, and it's not just that either. There's a whole bunch of other things too. But like, and then you got to be really introspective in order to pick up on that in a quick way, because usually you're not going to, and you don't realize it until you're like, why did I just snap at my kid, or why did I just yell at my wife or something? You know, because you're like, why did I just
Why am I not praying?
Well, that's a big one.
Why am I not praying? Why am I not asking God to calm my mind,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of times I have to ask God to calm my mind, right? Like, God, I can't control it. My mind is racing. I need you to calm my mind, right? But, you know, I mean, showing up when you shut down, men are famous, right? He keeps coming. I don't know if he's all there, but he keeps coming. Well, probably most of the time he's not.
Yeah, he's not all right? there.
So, you know, but, you know, here's one of them that hit me, and this made me realize when I read this, Reggie, that I am kind of in a stage of burnout now, which is I don't have the short temper or emotional numbness. I'm not there yet, but the sleep issues are there. The brain fog and disconnection is there. The spiritually dry and cynicalness is kind of starting to show up. And it does. It changes you. It changes you when you're at church. It changes you when you're at work. It changes you when you're at home. It changes you in every way you present as a man. It changes you, and you have to really got to step back and say, I'm supposed to be living a godly life. Am I doing the right thing? You know, a lot of us men are not taught to be very introspective, right? We're not taught to really look at what we are internally.
Although it's more important than.
Yeah.
It's critical.
Very critical. But we're not taught to be that way, right? Emotions in men are not fostered. So and it's an emotional thing. It's an emotional control thing to be introspective, right? You got to be able to control your emotions, look within and be like, all right, what am I doing wrong? How do I need to change this? Most men. It's not that they can't do it. They're just not equipped to do it. So one of the ways that I do that is through prayer. Like, if I can't do it, then I will petition God to do it for me. Right. And he knows when I'm stressed out, when I'm strung out, when I'm having trouble,
you know, so, along with that, just reading the Bible, let me say here's my problem with the biblical reading. I don't just read the Bible. I've been stuck in this rut where I just study a passage or something, and I'm like, so yeah, sure, you're reading scripture, but then I'm reading scripture to study it, and but I'm not actually just reading the word.
Yeah.
If you just sit down and just read the thing,
you're trying to dismantle it.
I'm so stuck in that where, and this is a realization that was like maybe like 2 days ago, by the way. It was just like, I don't just open the word and go and just read it and just to read it. No, I've been looking at a passage and being like going through all my study stuff but that's not the same thing.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to let the words do what the words are going to do.
Exactly. Right?
Like, sometimes deep dives don't work. You know, sometimes it's a living word for a reason.
Yeah.
Sometimes God means you to read it for reasons other than a deeper understanding.
I mean, so like forever I've been like, well, yeah, I'm reading the Bible every day, But it, and it, I mean, that's literally true because yes, I'm reading scripture every day, but I'm not just reading the scripture just to have it be revelatory. I'm reading scripture to study it and to understand it, which is good. That's one, that's like one part of it. But if you're not just reading it just to let it wash over you, bro, then it's you're missing out on a big part of what it's for.
Yeah,
and that's because listen, that's how God speaks to us. It's like through His text that He's put together with, you know, over 1,500 years and like, you know, 60 authors or something. I forget the number of authors, by the way. But yeah. But anyway, that's what I realized that the other day. Is I'm just not doing that. And my prayer life has suffered because it's like I feel like sometimes I don't take the time to like really settle down and be intentional with just because I'm always thankful. This is what the one thing I've always done in my prayer life is always be thankful because I think that's the primary thing that even Jesus kind of pointed out to when he was talking to his disciples and preaching and stuff was, you know, you all. Always have a sense of thanksgiving, but I'm good at that, but I'm not really good at really going through the motions of like just explaining how I feel and stuff. Cause it's just always been one of those things of like, hey, just look, Lord, just do what you're going to do. Use me. How you're going to use me. Do all this. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't really get in the weeds with things. And
well,
I should.
I think that's the tendency for men as well is, well, I'm the man. So I got to handle it.
Well, yeah.
Right.
But that should transcend into your prayer life. In other words,
now that's, you know, something that I have gotten pretty good at is when I'm into that prayer moment, right. Is, you know, something I committed to a long time ago was asking, it says in the Bible, you got to go boldly. So I go boldly. If I'm feeling something missing in my life, I got to ask God, why is this not here? Is this not meant for me? I need you to tell me. I'm not going to figure it out on my own, God. I need you to tell me.
You know how this is really, it's really silly and stupid, dude. Because I tell you why. Because I've literally prayed for things. I mean, literally have. I've literally said, hey, Lord, I really need this. This is bothering me, whatever. And then it's fixed.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I thank him for it. But then I don't remember it the next time.
Yeah,
it's like for some reason, I am it's the man thing. I'm just stuck sometimes, right? And yeah. you got to work yourself out of it. But that's also where this whole thing about giving yourself space to not only just like allow you to have time to breathe and you know without running around doing all this stuff and trying to be productive, but your mental state to like settle down, you know,
relax,
just chill,
breathe.
To like be, allow yourself to kind of have your, regain your thoughts and all this stuff.
Absolutely.
To have a moment where like you take, you know, it doesn't matter 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever it is, sit there and have a word with God and just be that and just do that. Right. And that's what you get such in trouble when you do that kind of stuff. Or, and here's the big one for probably me and you are really guilty about this is like, we don't take the time to really hang out or talk to the other men or.
Yeah. I would love to be in a men's regular Bible study.
Yeah.
But we have so many things going on. Really, the problem is us, you and I, if you and I committed to it, we would do it. But the problem is you and I already talk once a week. So we need to get some other dudes involved.
That's true.
And surround ourselves with counsel. Right. Yeah. So, but this leads to all the lies, man, all the lies we're told, right? Look at some of them. If I don't do it, it won't get done. That's not true.
There's a point where I think being productive is a good thing, but it gets to there's a point though where it crosses the line.
Well, but there's also a point of diminishing returns.
Exactly.
Too. When you get to the point where you're trying so hard to be so productive that you're overwhelmed by the things that you're trying to produce through, you start to have diminishing returns. Oh, well, this didn't quite work the way I wanted it to, or God, I couldn't get this thing done right. Now you're worried about the fact that it didn't get done right. And you're trying to figure out how to go. Like there's, that leads down this really deep, dark hole of feeling inadequate and feeling, you know, feeling a lack of control, which it's a lie. I mean, God is sovereign and you're not the key cog. You're not the linchpin in that situation.
And I'll say this too, that this is where I think your stage of life is important to understand as well. When you're younger,
yeah,
that is the time to be busting your balls and doing and really giving her hell and doing that kind of thing. You that's when you should be doing that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Your physical self, your body and everything is really built to do that when you're early in stages in your career and all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't last forever.
No.
And eventually
that's a stage.
Yeah, eventually you get to the point, and I think this is where I've kind of figured out where I'm at. I'm not that guy anymore.
Once I hit my 40s, I started to realize that.
Yeah. I mean, like, I still like doing physical things. I still like, I think it's important. But, you know, I said for a long time, even on this show, where I'd like, if I could do tree work tomorrow or whatever and do that for a living, I would drop everything and do it. But I've figured that out. No.
Well, and don't get me wrong. If I got to turn it on and grind hard, I can turn it on and I can grind hard. But unlike in my 20s where I could grind hard for a month and then live regular life, in my 40s, now my 50s, if I grind hard for 3 or 4 days, I got to have time to recover. I got to have time to bring myself back. I find that when I'm doing that heavy circular grind and I'm pushing forward, if I don't stop and take a minute and let myself rest, I start to break in a lot of different places that I don't normally break.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd just say, like, you know, we turning it on, you need to be able to turn it off. Like you said, yeah, sure. You can turn it on, but I mean, when I've turned it on though, that's only brief periods because then I'm going to hurt myself at this point in my life. I will overdo it. I will be down for a couple of days because I overdid it.
Well,
if I don't turn it off.
Yeah. You've got it. You have to, part of that too is knowing yourself.
Yeah.
And most men haven't taken the time to figure out what that is. Right. But here's my favorite one. Here's my favorite one. And this is my favorite one because this is, I think of all the lies, this is where you'll find the most truth. And that is you're only valuable when you're producing. Well, underneath, I love this. It says your worth was settled at the cross, not in your to-do list. Dude, you got to take that home, make a t-shirt and wear that bad boy all day long. Cause that's, there are days when I can't do as much and there's days when I can do a whole lot.
And this is where that eternal mindset comes into play. Mm-hmm. If you're only looking at where you're at on earth as the end goal, then you will lose.
You'll grind forever.
It won't. Well, you'll grind till you die. And then, taking the time to like rest and acknowledge the creator of the universe and, oh yeah. Hey Jesus. Yeah. I see you're there.
Word, Lord. Word.
But yeah, I mean, dude, you got to do, because I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I forgot where it is, but like if you spend every waking moment just in prayer, it wouldn't be a wasteful life.
No.
Right? Because it's not about the things. It's not about, it really isn't. Keep in mind that at the end of all existence, when everything dies in heat death, there's nothing left anyway.
You know, I was listening to a guy, he's a former Navy SEAL in an interview, and he said something in the beginning of this we've all heard. He goes, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. But he goes, the thing that all the warriors forget is you still have to garden. He's like,
still have to do it.
He's like, and he goes, that's where the gardening is the work on yourself. The garden is the work on your spirituality. The gardening is your work on your family and your work on your connections. He says, the wars will come. He goes, the war with mowing the lawn will come. The war with fixing the house will come. The war with, you know, the kids and practice in school. He goes, those wars are always going to have to be fought. He goes, but even if you're a warrior in a garden, you still have to garden.
Still have to garden.
Right? So I thought that was a very, very just powerful piece of wisdom coming from a guy whose entire career in life was based on how much can you produce, you know? So
I would say that, you know, there are, I've known some men, and it was, it's well, I'll just say it. They were lazy.
Oh yeah. There's lots of them,
you know? And I even get in that trap every once in a while, right? You're just like, I'm doing it. I get it. But that's actually fine if you're doing it every once in a while. But like, I've known some dudes, man, who just.
Oh, I've known some brothers that are. I'm just like, dude, you need to get it together. Lazy in their spirituality, lazy in their discipline, lazy in their home, lazy in their job. Like,
yeah, like, yeah, like, it's a totally different scenario.
When I have a slow day at work and there's not a lot going on, and you know, a lot of times we'll peek at our phone or we'll. You know, because there's nothing going on, I feel guilty. Like, I feel like I should be doing something, right? But unfortunately, not every man feels that way.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, there's quite a bit. Burnout specifically, though, is like this trail that you're leading to something. And if you keep going, it's going to really lead into something bigger.
Yeah.
And bigger until it just everything falls apart. So I guess the reason why I wanted to really pull this in is just because there's a lot of times I think, especially, you know, things are a lot more complicated in 2025 than they were 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60. I mean, dude, there's so much that we have going on with the technologies that we have, which our jobs that we have, our finances, our families and stuff. It's way more complicated than it ever should be, to be honest.
Well, which is part of why I laid down media. I'm not, news is gone. I've gotten to the point where it's just like, it isn't worth it. Like that's one more drain on me.
Yeah.
Right. Now I'll check in from time to time, but I don't, 2 minutes, maybe the most, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say excluding my mistaken participation.
Dude, one of these days you're going to learn. You're going to learn, I swear.
I know, dude.
It never leads anywhere good.
It doesn't.
It never does. And the worst thing about it, and this kind of feeds into what we're talking about, is, you know, let's say you're the most productive dude on the planet. Let's just, your middle name is Productivity.
Okay.
You never feel like it's all done. So you walk away disappointed every time. Right. So when there's a certain point when you have to say it's okay. It's okay. We're going to get there. It's okay. Right. Like I know that there are ebbs and flows in life. There's seasons where I'm going to be busier, whether that's my job, whether that's my home, whether that's everything else, there's going to be ebbs and flows in life. There's going to be interruptions in life, right? Like, you know, you're going to have family interruptions and you're going to have, you know, physical interruptions and illnesses and things like that. But it is never done. So stop disappointing yourself with that fact and understand that there is always work to do. There just is.
Well, and I think this is one thing that you have to have something left in your tank or in, you know, that you can devote to your family or your community, right? It's not really just produce for everybody else. Run around, do all this, but you got to have something left. Right. You can't. And I would say that you got to think of about it. This, do you really want your family to have the leftovers of what you've been doing? Right.
It's the hardest part, man.
Right. I mean, you got to think about most. That. Yeah. I mean, your family needs, that's the primary.
Well, and the weird dichotomy of that is you're cheating your family because you feel like you're doing something. Yes. For them, right.
And that's not the case though. I mean, it's really not. Cause then the more you're sitting there doing it, the more you're away from it and everything else, then you're disconnecting farther and farther from your family and being more distant. That's not helping any. That's no. You're not fulfilling your one. It's not fixing the primary anything. Role here. You it's know, not
fixing anything.
No, it's worse. And I mean, especially you know, I see this in some pastors and ministers and stuff. Man, I mean, they take it very seriously. And look, beautiful people who are trying their damnedest to like do what they're supposed to do for the ministry and do their pastoral thing and all that stuff. But then their family is kind of, you know, gets the leftovers of what their ministry is. And I'm not saying that there's times when the pastor, whatever, isn't going to be doing a lot of stuff. That's not what I mean. But, you know, there's some serious burnout going on in the church leadership. Oh,
absolutely.
You know,
like it's absolutely astonishing. Yeah. The rate of pastoral suicide has gone through the roof.
Oh yeah.
Pastors dropping out, you know, you're just seeing a lot of this whole thing that where they're because the pastor takes on the role. I have to do everything, especially in small churches. Pastor wants to be involved in everything. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I get that.
Yeah. So look, here's some things, right? We did a whole episode on rest.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through all that already. If you haven't seen that, you can find it in our channel. If you want to know really, but rest is important. Sabbath is important. It's what, you know, we're commanded to do. So it's a worshipful thing to rest.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, really turn off, make it a Sabbath. Don't do your work. Don't have no emails going on. You know, really, really make it a restful Sabbath. Have one. Making sure it's always there. Make sure you have a routine date night. And I know I'm guilty of that as well. You got to kind of have that where you know, whatever.
And there's ways to do that too. Like Julie and I, like tomorrow, we like to go out to breakfast. We eat a late breakfast. We sit down, we talk. We talk about any family business we need to talk about. And then we just do a, you know, check engine light on each other, right? You know, how are you doing? What's going on? How are you feeling? How's life treating you, right? Like all these, it's important because your spouse is your sounding board as well as anything else, right? You have to be able to connect, you know. My son went out of the country for the first time and it's been a hard experience. Right. I've been even more trying to connect and talk with my wife and make sure that we're, you know, that she doesn't have any concerns and that I don't have any concerns. And there's all these things that you have to do, but it's important, man. You're right. That's a huge, huge deal.
Yeah. I mean, as I would say, rest is not weak. It's spiritual warfare. In a culture of hustle.
And look,
I got that from ChatGPT, by the way. I didn't create it.
Think about it this way. There's nothing wrong with hustling, right?
Right.
There's something wrong with hustling to no avail.
Correct.
And you can hustle up to a certain point, but eventually there will be no avail to that hustle. So you have to really meter that. You know, a lot of effective people can work 5 hours in a day and get everything done. Sometimes jobs allow that, sometimes jobs don't, but that's really what's happening, right? Like we're just killing ourselves, you know?
And like, think about it this way too. If you're taking time, you establish, okay, I'm going to do this and this is going to be my day off. This is going to be my restful days. I'm going to do this. I'm going to also allow your spouse to have that same thing too.
Yeah.
This gets to where you really got to, and for some of us, me especially, it's like, we got to just say, look, no, today
it's,
I got it. You know, you gotta do that someday, some days. You gotta let your wife sit there and have that same thing too. She needs it as well. Now, a lot of times, cause if we're all, you gotta think about it too. If you're a hustle man and you're sitting there hustle, you know, grinding it, what's your wife doing? Probably doing overtime, doing all the stuff that you're not doing at home.
Yep.
I'm not saying that you should be doing all the stuff at home, but I'm saying at the same token, you got to understand that support chain that you got with your wife is probably overburdened as well.
Yeah, for sure. And it ain't probably. For sure it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, look, having a group of dudes around as well, we've said this many times, one of those things about burnout, it's drastically helps that if you got a bunch of guys, which we don't. We don't have a bunch of dudes. Here and there we try.
I'm a stumbler because I keep my circle tight. Like I don't have a lot of people in my circle. That comes from mistrust and being betrayed by a lot of people. Right. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day and he and I both agreed. We were like, you know, I got like three people in my circle and that's really all I'm looking for. Now, I'm not saying that if somebody else came along that wasn't worthy and that I found that I could trust and wouldn't be allowed into the circle. But right now, the three that I have is really all I need. And that might sound, what's the word I'm looking for? That might sound cynical a little bit,
there's a difference between
he who listens to the chatter of many fools becomes a fool himself.
There you go. The wise counsel, right? That's what we're looking for. But, yeah. I have like a whole list of biblical verses based on topic. Like I have a whole bunch. I went through and I got some about rest and renewing your strength, relying on God's guidance, things about community, prayer, God's timing, thanksgiving, and God's peace, right? There's a whole list, and I don't think I showed you this, Brian, but this is a whole list of verses that are associated with those particular topics.
I'm sure you will post those under the episode.
Yeah, it'll be in the description.
And let me also, just as an act of encouragement, and this kind of ties into everything we talked about in the episode, even though ill-fated Facebook post from the beginning. Lay something down. All of us have something in our life that we've toiled at, and it's really not doing us any good, and it's really not doing our families any good. And lay something down, and then commit that time to focusing on rest. If you spend an hour a week keyboard warrioring on Facebook, put the keyboard down. Spend that time resting, recovering. If you spend 2 hours a week, you know, doom scrolling through Facebook Reels and Instagram, put the phone down, put the computer down, and spend some time just resting and, you know, investing in yourself and praying and doing those things. You would be amazed how much better you will feel if you just do those things.
And even when you're doing, like, I guess this is what I'm saying. One point to say this, like I'm no poster child for like being a perfect human being by any means, but I try. And even when you try, you're still going to, you can still find yourself getting there. And I think that's what you really need to kind of look for. I shouldn't say look for, but like understand it. You know, how do you know when you're there? Well, when you find things being like prayer and stuff and it stumbles and you're kind of not feeling so, I don't know, elevated in your prayer life. If that ain't doesn't even happen, if you're finding yourself being more irritable, you know, it's not really about being tired or stressed out necessarily, but you'll feel something akin to that is surely, you know, that, I mean, you got to look at this stuff and just kind of step back and go, and this is really where taking that time, at least at least once a week to kind of look back and go, how have I been doing with myself? Where am I at? What's my mental state? Where, you know, how things are going? Got to do that.
The Oxford Dictionary defines rest as this: cease work or movement in order to relax, refresh oneself, or recover strength. To be based or grounded in or depend upon nothing. An instant or period of relaxation or ceasing to engage in strenuous or stressful activity. So part of this trap is, well, I'll go do something else and I'll rest. That's not rest. That's just going and doing something else. Rest. Sit down. Pour yourself a nice, cool glass of lemonade. Don't turn anything on. Just chill and get in your own head and think about things that are important to you and things that are going to develop you as a person. But the overarching stress of that is to rest, is to bring yourself to a halt of movement and rest.
Yeah. And not just rest, but be productive in your rest. How about that? Rest efficiently.
Rest efficiently. You gotta explain that one to me. How you rest efficiently?
Because if you're not taking advantage of the time and you don't rest and you really rest, it's not gonna do anything. You see what I'm saying? You gotta really rest.
Yeah, like chill. Just let it go.
I know, but shut like it down. A lot of people, turn it off. They'll think they're it could be. Look, rest could look all kinds of things. I mean, like that could be. For me, that could be running outside and picking up an axe and splitting a bunch of wood, and then that gets my mind to reset and something else or doing that. It could be somebody getting on a motorcycle and going on a cruise for a couple hours or something.
Go for a walk.
It could be just somebody but even when you're doing all those things and you're resetting your mental state, you still got to allow for that prayer time. I just want to make that point. And prayer time, you really need that prayer time to be like, nothing going on. You need that prayer time to have it just be you and God. It really needs to be that way. At least some point during the day, every day, right? That's a productive rest session. In other words, you know, like if you have trouble, like you said, with Facebook or Instagram or whatever, you turn that off and you just sit down and you just put on some music and just listen to it or something. Fine. But if you're sitting there and you're like, and you sit and you're trying to rest, but you keep allowing yourself to like pick up your phone, or, you know, it's like, you let your mind just start churning and churning and churning. And then it starts thinking about all the stuff you got to do and all you got to do. That's not rest either.
No, it's not.
Right. That's what I mean by be productive in your rest.
Yeah.
You know, God established the Sabbath on purpose. And he actually, the Sabbath established his enthronement, if you want to think about it that way, because it was after creation, everything, that he went to his throne.
Yeah.
So that, put that
in your God mind. Spoke of rest before sin.
So anyway, burnout is a thing, and been there, are there.
And pull your pants up. Sorry.
Well, just not, it's not even like, just don't, why would you train up your boy to continue to be a boy?
Yeah.
That's not what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't care if your mom or dad or whatever, but you know, you should be encouraging and spurring your boy to dress like a respectable man and have a good self-image enough of himself to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known a lot of guys that were in the prison system. You don't want to look like that.
Yeah.
They'll tell you what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you want to be a punk, okay, but that's not cool. It's not, that's not what it is. It doesn't matter what fashion says. It doesn't, I don't care about any of that stuff. No self-respecting man is going to do that. You will, and tell me one, that there was one ministry or something somebody brought up, and I'm like, well, that's I've never heard of it. Don't even care to see that if that's what they're going to be doing. But yeah. Anyway, burnout is a thing.
Yeah.
Everybody gets to that point, especially in 2025. It's a lot more complicated now than what it is. You're going to need some time. And you need some brothers. And you need God. This is RB Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.